come. I would have to be right still until the whole crowd ate. My mama always said to me, Jim, take a tater and wait. Now taters never did taste good with chicken on the plate, but I had to eat them just the same. That is why I look so bad and have these puny ways, because I always had to take an old cold tater and wait. They would come to stay a while with us. I would have to slip around and raise a little fuss, in fear that I would spill the beans or break the china plate. My mama always said to me, Jim, take a tater and wait. Now taters never did taste good with chicken on the plate, but I had to eat them just the same. That is why so bad and have these puny ways, because I always had to take an old cold tater and wait. Just leave me the bun. The feet and neck were all that's left upon the china plate. It makes you pretty darn weak to take an old cold tater and wait. Well, taters never
all did right. Taste good. It is Saturday, March 4th, 2023, and time for another edition of Blackbird Nine's Saturday Snack Shack. Our apologies there. Having some technical difficulties here bringing the guest in. So we're working on that. Might be tap dancing tonight. You never know. Bringing you in. So hopefully we can get that straightened out. Anyway, hope everyone's having a wonderful Saturday, and let's go ahead and introduce the guest. Hope we can get him in here. Tonight's episode is episode 14 and is entitled Noticing Patterns with Mr. Patrick Three Stacks. And many of you probably know him from his very popular show, Surviving Wimerica, which airs every Friday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And he has lots of very curious guests, like myself. I was a guest on this week, and we did the pre-record on Wacky Wednesday, and it went so well, I thought we should just blow off the Breakfast Club show that I was working on for Wednesday night and go find an open bar and continue the conversation over a few pints and some wings, maybe. But, you know, the internet being what it is and the laws of physics and separation of distances being what they are, I opted for the next best thing and invited him to come on the Snack Shack tonight so we can continue the conversation. let's see here. Hopefully we can get him in and see what he wants to talk about. And so maybe he wants to talk about the weather. I mean, that we had the world is ending storms back to Indian summer, perfect spring day here on Blackjack Mountain, North Kakalaki. Nature is in its full bio-offensive with the forsythia bushes, especially with their pollen bombs. But the Bradford pears and the daffodils are signaling to everyone to get their garden tools dirty. It's that time of year again. And the all-night serenading, mating the frogs have given way to lots of frog eggs in the ponds. And so, you know, maybe he wants to talk about that. You know, what was the weather with for him and the rest of us yesterday? Quite the weather day across the world. Or maybe he wants to talk about the latest in the culture wars in New Boone, North Kakalaki, echo, 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 over the recent two events. One, unknown whitish man with swastika flag near Chicken Swinger Clubhouse versus angry black man from Atlanta going on Mad Max road rage with a semi-tractor trailer rig against local white folks. Guess which one is the hate crime? You guessed it. The angry black man from Atlanta, Tobias M. Jones. No problem, that's just reckless driving, right? But some kid, organic or synthetic, waving a flag with a swastika on it, that ancient symbol of four seasons, the Big Dipper going around the North Pole star. Okay, great. We'll bring him in here after we figure out what he wants to talk about. So maybe he wants to talk about, you know, this kid waving a flag, gets immediate town council action. They got passed a resolution and got a letter from the to the editor from our local high school, you know, educating us about why anti-Semitism is bad, right? So maybe he wants to talk about that, or maybe he wants to talk about the insufferable John Stewart with his latest kvetching about everything wrong with America, this time guns. Or maybe he wants to talk about the Kalergi bomb on Dixie, Nemirata Rudwana, a.k.a. Nikki Haley, and her bid to do to America what she did to South Kakalaki, right? Or maybe he wants to talk about Jesse Smollett. Jesse Smollett is going to appeal his hate crime hoax conviction, right, as Fox Nation is set to do a documentary series on Jesse Smollett. Wonder if he'll do Bubba Wallace next. Maybe we could talk about that. Or maybe we could talk about the country battle over the Overton window. I'm talking about, of course, the great ADL versus the GDL SmackDown. Is it organic or is it synthetic? Do we have the Streisand effect going on? The rush to shred the First Amendment in the name of community standards and chicken swinger sensitivities. I know all it took in Boone for us to get one is somebody waving a flag. I wonder if that was organic or synthetic. Or maybe he wants to talk about the January 6ers still in prison, but Tucker, nice Kabbalah bracelet, Carlson has all the tapes. That gives me a warm fuzzy. What does he think about that? Or maybe he wants to talk about fishing. So anyway, so Mr. Patrick Three Stacks, welcome to the Saturday Snack Shack. And what in the world would you want to talk about tonight?
Well, I mean, all those like topics sound great, but I kind of want to like just shift it a little bit to to American history that's often neglected. But maybe we can venture back, you know, real quick, you know, and really discuss one of those topics. But I'd like to talk about some basically cultural stuff that we've forgotten about that I think is kind of important to America.
All right.
To a more innocent time, let's just say. To a more innocent time.
Yeah, well, like we say here at the Snack Shack, the host has the mic. I mean, the guest has the mic, and I just try to keep up. So let's go.
Okay. First, I want to like bring attention to a lot of people out there that a lot of the inner cities within the industrial north wasn't always just filled with, you know, let's just say, you know, blacks and Hispanics. There was a time when the cities, the inner cities, also welcomed people migrating southward, and that is the Appalachian people. That is encompassing the state of eastern Kentucky, eastern Tennessee, and parts of, you know, northern Alabama and northern Mississippi. And, of course, where our friend here hails from, western Kakalaka, or how I like to call it. Well, these migrants, as you can imagine, were not given a warm welcome in the northern industrial cities. And in fact, it was quite a cultural shock to a lot of the people that came there. They were quite taken aback, and I'm pretty sure they felt probably the same way that many of the people that would experience the Industrial Revolution kind of felt. All the traditions they had back home, which they were able to transfer a lot of those traditions back, they were able to like keep kind of a tight-knit community, but they were met with some new obstacles. First, a lot of their neighbors weren't very friendly. Let's just say that. Their neighbors weren't very friendly. the people in the cities were not very friendly towards them. And this is kind of one of the hidden facts in American history, is that the Appalachian migrants that were coming there to work in the industrial north and to the factories, they were met with much hostility, of course, you know, having a different accent, not being able to fit in. These are like commonplace. And what can I say? My father and a lot of his people, you know, hail from Eastern Kentucky, and I'm pretty sure if they had taken that migration to the north, to places like Cincinnati, they would have probably, you know, experienced the same cultural shock, but they didn't. So anyway, like most people, what they did is they adapted, they tried their best to fit in, and, well, you know, contrary to what people think, the inner cities have never been nice to anyone. It's always been cold, detached, and it's never had a warm reception to anybody. And so they started forming gangs. They started forming types of gangs. Not quite like the gangs you see in Chicago presently. They weren't really about, you know, violence per se. And I don't even think a lot of the black gangs initially were about violence per se. I think a lot of them were probably, you know, over just neighborhood kids, just neighborhoods, you know, getting together, trying to defend themselves, trying to fend for themselves. So you're wondering, like, what is this lesson? What does this lesson impart upon to us, you know, in this, like, deracinated, detached society we presently live in? Well, I think part of the reason why we struggle as a people to combat, you know, the Jews and a lot of the, you know, hostile non-whites that are against us is that we don't have much in the way of, like, a cultural core. America, unfortunately, has severed our cultural core, and it has cored us to the point to where we are just a amalgam of whatever slogans, you know, the politicians put into us, whatever, you know, consumerist, whatever kind of, like, you know, what is popular at the moment. And quite unfortunately, this is probably deliberate that everyone has just been modified. And this kind of goes into, like, you know, what you were talking about with the Kalergi plan and you know, kind of the globalization. Well, the industrialists, of course, you know, which during this time in America, they did have kind of a healthy sense of race. They had a healthy sense of identity. Because of the 1920s Restriction Act that was placed upon people from the, you know, people from the third world coming here to America, they dipped into a lot of the poor people of Upper South and Appalachia. But the unfortunate fact is, I don't want to sound here like a Marxist or a communist or whatever, but it was exploitive. I mean, whether we like it or not, a lot of the stuff, the industrialists, what they did to the people was very exploitive. They just saw them as sort of like cogs and commodities. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a healthy capitalist society, you know, that also can integrate a lot of the principles of free market within, you know, folkish and what I would call volkish ways. But the problem stands is that America can't seem to balance such a thing. It can't seem to balance cultural core or basically profit. So what happens often is that, you know, like, whether it be Appalachian white people, whether it be like the Poles or the Italians also that populated a lot of the Chicago neighborhoods, they have to forego a lot of their cultural heritage to try to fit in, and therefore they get displaced and they don't have any identity. And while I do support, like, you know, white sovereignty and, like, you know, identify as, like, you know, a white person in America, it still feels cold and detached as opposed to what, you know, initially, you know, I mean, I think people can argue that American identity is kind of like unique upon its own, and Americans are like kind of a unique people. And who more American than, you know, poor Appalachian people that were migrating to Chicago? Now, what's interesting in all this is that a lot of the people who proclaim stuff like white privilege, that ascribe white privilege to white people and say that white people are affixed a certain kind of privilege over non-whites, and they never mention anybody in like Appalachia. As a matter of fact, the narrative is that people in Appalachia sort of are lesser, I would say lesser than a lot of the upper middle class white people, and they have more sympathy, of course, to the non-whites, which I wrote. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to jump in here with personal family history with Appalachian Mountains. Is my grandfather, Fred Blackburn, and his buddy Dewey Rhodes, when they were young men and met my grandmother and her best friend, wanted to marry the gals, and so they had to go out to Detroit and learn how to make trucks and cars and tractors for this Henry Ford fellow. And then they, you know, saved up all their money and came back, and it was interesting that they, their sons especially, did some of the first cars for racing in this area that led to, you know, the NASCAR circuits and things like that, but, you know, that part of American culture. But one of the things that was interesting is these tales about the industrial North and how they were treated.
Yeah.
You know, basically was, okay, we went and we made the money, what we needed to set up, you know, they both set up some of the first modern chicken farms in, you know, the world, right? We had a very big poultry industry in Wilkes County. And, you know, they were part of that mechanization of the farm model. Mm-hmm. And that's what they used their money for. But it was always, you know, there's no way in the world you would ever get either my Uncle Dewey or my grandfather Fred to ever set foot in Detroit or New York or anyplace else, because they were treated so badly. Yeah. In that area, and it's like, you know, you suddenly realize that the Southerners are, you know, we're the Kulaks of North America. You know, we're that independent Celtic, Scot, Irish, English, you know, mix of very independent, very capable people, and that is what the, you know, the powers that should not be hate the most in the world. So, you know, we're definitely getting, you know, the Kulak treatment in the, you know, industrial North, and you think, you know, how many of those big factories were owned by chicken swingers, you know, so you just, they love to, bit. You know, yeah. So anyway, so go back to what you were going on. And when you were listening to a Blackburn Nine Snack Shack, and our guest tonight is Patrick Three Stacks. So go on with what you're talking about with the way they were treated and such.
Well, I don't want to just emphasize like kind of the grievances of, you know, of like the migrating white people. I want to say that this just sort of represents an interesting tapestry into the American experience, and wanted to show that, you know, the poor, you know, hillbillies that went to Chicago and went to like places like Detroit and went to Cincinnati, I think their story has not been told quite well. And I think a lot of like pro-white people that listen to this station and don't often like appreciate just how, you know, rich, I would say, you know, Appalachians are in cultural heritage and how they represent America. And one of the few people I can say that are resilient and strong and were very proud of their white identity, and they were proud to be European. They were independent. You know, I can say that a lot of people don't appreciate that aspect, because into the 70s, a lot of these Appalachians, they started, like, you know, because the gangs, the Hispanic and black gangs started forming in Chicago, they started forming their own sort of protection, you know, from the other groups. And they even gained the respect of the Hispanics and blacks that a lot of middle class white people in Chicago, I think, couldn't gain the respect of, you know, the minorities within these inner cities, because they fought, they lived amongst, and they sort of had a mutual respect with one another. They didn't mix with one another, of course, but they did have a mutual respect for one another. So you would see, which is kind of interesting, there's like these little cards, you know, these little cards that these different gangs, these white gangs, and yes, there were white gangs, whether people know it or not, and it's not really, in my opinion, really something to be ashamed of. You know, like many people, I think, matter of fact, I think it's kind of a testament of, you know, white male masculinity that's been sort of snuffed out, you know, an honor that's been snuffed out, because a lot of these like white gangs, which Appalachians were a part of, were kind of like knightly orders. They were kind of like the closest you could get to knightly orders, I would say, in America. These fraternal.
See, that's the thing I was going to say is, yeah, this is, you know, the warrior class, and yeah, that has been shamed out of us as they want to emasculate, you know, the population into these, you know, little worker drones that, you know, don't stand up for themselves. They just follow orders and stuff. And, you know, that's so spot on that, you know, this was the hierarchy, you know, of the pecking order of the males in the community, and that they would enforce their boundaries and they would protect their property and their women and their children and their elderly, you know, from all threats, you know, on the outside of that perimeter. And that was just the culture. And, you know, to somehow to be convinced that, oh, we have to, you know, emasculate our men and outsource that now to law enforcement.
Yep.
That, you know, law enforcement is now responsible for protecting and serving. But, you know, we see that that's really not the case. But keep going.
Yeah, Uptown, like Chicago, is called Hillbilly Heaven. That's what the name of it is. And unfortunately now it's a haven for homosexuals in Chicago. It's Hipsterville.
Everything's fake and gay. Everything's fake and gay.
Everything, literally. And the only thing that I think still remains in Uptown Chicago, and by the way, I'm not from Chicago. I've just done research on this. So if there's like anybody out there listening that's, you know, from Chicago, maybe you can like tell me best. But from what I understand is there is a honky-tonk bar by the name of Carol's is like the only place that only remnant of like Appalachian influence in Uptown. But yeah, it was just, it was quite an interesting panoramic of, you know, of like the American experience and the urbanization of like the Appalachian white experience. And there's like a lot to look into there. I wanted to showcase this and let the audience know that this is an interesting history. Now, you're mentioning the swastika, right? Well, a lot of the white gangs in like Chicago actually openly displayed the swastika. They, you could see, matter of fact, there's a video called Uptown where you see all these white gang members. They are displaying the swastika right there in clear view. Matter of fact, they used to walk around Uptown Chicago with the swastika, with the Confederate flag, openly on display, and no blacks messed with them, no Hispanics messed with them. There was kind of, like I said, there was this mutual agreement amongst the different groups, and I'm pretty sure that these things paralleled in other parts of urban, you know, America. And, you know, this is kind of interesting. This is an interesting dynamic, I noticed, with white people, and I don't see this with other races, is that, you know, I'm not the most racist person per se. I have a little bit of prejudice like everyone does. I'm a separatist, but I've told blacks and I've told like other non-whites my, you know, my feelings about race, and they respect me. But the minute I tell, like, you know, snooty upper class whites or Jews about my, you know, my stance on separatism, it's like, this is the most dead, this is the most awful sin in the world.
Oh, how dare you? How dare you? So
I don't get that. I don't understand how like non-whites are okay with it. Yep. You know, which I've had quite more interaction with non-whites than most upper, and that's the irony, is that as a working class white man, I've had more interactions with non-whites than any of these middle class white people or Jews that want to tell me about race.
What I love even more than the virtue signaling, you know, indignation, is the complete blind eye to the double standard that exists in Israel, where it's perfectly okay for Israel to treat its Palestinians and its blacks
and
this way,
Ethiopian
and
Jews,
to be a, you know, an ethno state, and you know, that double standard's just
and
fine.
The Arab it's minority like, and the Arab minority, which lives in, they actually live in squalor and ghettos in places in Israel, and they don't have a problem with that, but they have they want to tell whites how to, you know, freedom of association, which I thought was a constitutional right, you know, freedom of association. You don't necessarily have to if you don't want to live next door. And now if people like diversity out there, knock yourself out. You know, I'm not going to restrict you. This is America. You can go live amongst you know, diversity. But nobody really honestly likes diversity. They like to say they do, right. But they don't really like it.
Well, what gets me is, you know, we were talking in the show we did the pre-record on Wednesday, which I believe aired last night, about diversity. And it's like the Appalachian Mountain culture is a unique thing unto itself in the entire world and should be protected as being a very unique thing.
I agree.
And it's amazing that it's like that. No. You have to, you know, turn over all of the Appalachian Mountains to a multicultural society now. And we've got all these NGO groups that all they do all day long is funnel in, you know, non-white, non-Christian people into our areas and say, if you say boo about this, you're now breaking the law or our terms of service. But anyway, you are listening to Blackbird Nine Saturday Snack Shack. And tonight we have with us Mr. Patrick Three Stacks. And after the break, we're going to be opening up the phone line. So here, call us at Republic Broadcasting Network at 512-248-8252. 512-248-8252. Or if you have to, remember that the station has to foot the bill on the toll calls, but you can call toll-free 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And I forgot to mention that you can always come out to the chat room that runs 24/7 with the hottest news and the dankest memes on the interwebs, bb9tradingpost.chitanga.com. That's bb9tradingpost.chitanga.com. And if you're wanting to trade some nuggets, that's great. But if you're looking for a knife fight, we just assume you go someplace else. So real quick before the break, you know, tell us about just a second, you know, about, you know, why you came up with your show title as Surviving Why America, and, you know, does this fit into what you're talking about tonight?
I came up with it primarily because I like I like the concept that I saw America was deviating towards Weimar standards, and I said, well, I feel like I'm living in Weimar. I actually call it Qua because that's kind of a take on it. That actually comes from this guy, Alex Lender. He called it the Qua, which I think means, I don't know if I can say this on air, but Kike's wife.
This is a family show.
Okay, sorry. Sorry then. It's the K word. It's the whites and Africans. That's where the Qua comes from. But that's where I got the name from. I got the name for, and also it got it from, like, you know, I saw Why America conditions that are happening presently. And it was initially dedicated to, you know, prepping. And also maybe, you know, racial politics as well as discussing the current events, what were happening with, you know, European Americans, what's happening with European Americans, because I felt like it was not a voice, an authentic voice out there. And I always like to credit myself as being an authentic voice, unlike, you know, not controlled by any sort of anybody, just raw. Just presenting everything raw and uncut and how things actually are on, you know, amongst, like, working class white people. And, you know, not to be classist, you know, I'm not a classist per se. It's just that's my perspective, primarily from, like, working class and even middle class white people who feel marginalized by, you know, American society.
Right, and yeah, I really like your interview style, and it's kind of like when you go sparring with somebody and you have a couple of bruised ribs the next day, you know it was a good workout. So, you had me on my toes there pretty good.
I appreciate
I enjoyed that.
You're a very knowledgeable person. You touched upon a lot of things that I'd never heard of, such as relating to the telecommunications and
We're going to have to hold it here. We're listening to the Snack Shack. We'll be back after these messages.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
We which will conclusively prove George Soros' role in orchestrating the plandemic. But first, dear patriots, the truth train has brought us a conspiracy in our own backyard. Now, you may think you know the story.
Now, it's like I always say, there's a whole lot of bullshit out there. So I'd like to give Soros, Pelosi, the Zionists, the Mexican, the snowflakes, and Oklahoma.
Stay strong, truth tellers. Stay strong. Stay strong. And we'll rock till the break of dawn. This feels like heaven. Just you and me.
This feels like heaven. You're listening to RBN, in defense of the Republic.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Now, taters never did taste good, but chicken on the plate. But I had to eat them just the same. That is why so bad and have these puny ways, because I always had to take an old cold tater and whey.
And tonight is episode 14 and is entitled Noticing Patterns with Mr. Patrick Three Stacks. And so before the break, you know, we were talking about the Appalachian Mountains as being this, you know, unique thing and that's being destroyed. And again, if you want to give us a call and what you want to talk about, you can call 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. Or toll-free 1-800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443. And once again, it's up to you to keep networks like Republic Broadcasting on the air. If you still have resource, please, please, please donate to Republic Broadcasting so we can keep this station on the air, because you can handle the truth. All right, so let's see if we got a caller lined up here. So not seeing the call queue. So Patrick Three Stacks, let's keep going with what you were talking about.
Very interesting. Which I think led to a lot of the unpleasant conditions to the present day Appalachia, and also to the, you know, northern migration of a lot of people in Appalachia. You have to understand, Appalachians love their they love, you know, they love their region. They don't want to leave. But a lot, unfortunately, it's also a land of, you know, sorrow. It's a land of a lot of hardships. And personally, I think maybe the Indians that preceded, you know, the Scots, Irish, and Europeans that settled here probably thought that it was a cursed land. You know, despite being beautiful, I think it was probably a cursed land because there's plenty of Indian mounds that dot the landscape, and there's just kind of an ominous vibe over a lot of Appalachia. And go ahead.
It's one of those, you know, you like nature. Have you ever met nature? Have you ever spent a winter in Cumberland Gap?
Oh, yeah, you know? I have.
Yeah. So, so let's have Mr. Producer, let's bring in Mr. Chance from West Virginia. Mr. Chance, how are you this evening?
Stack, shacks, and three stacks. You guys sound like a law firm.
Oh, God, it's a law firm. Oh, God.
Law firm. We'll sue.
Oh, stacks and stacks and snacks, yes. Oh, God.
I got a question for you guys. Bear with me a little bit. I'm a little bit out of breath. I don't know how I'm coming across. Since I had half a lung removed
Since I had half a lung removed 18 years ago,
I'd get a little exerted, and it's a little difficult breathing sometimes, and this is one of those times. My question is this. Have you guys heard what that Dilbert creator guy,
yes.
What was his name? Scott Adams, what he said?
Scott Adams, yes.
Okay, my question is this. Whether one is racist or not does not matter. What he said makes sense.
Because no, it's true. It's true.
If black people are going to hate on all white people for any apparent reason, separating from them would be the utmost of common sense, I would say, if that's the case.
You can't tell most whites that, unfortunately, though. Like most whites, they don't
let them get mugged and shot. I couldn't care less if they're stupid. Be honest with you.
I agree with you.
But as far as myself, when somebody comes out and tells me they hate me because I'm white, I say adios. I mean, let's face it. That's the only common sense response, I would say. Would you guys say?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. Yep. I mean, it's just.
Yes, sir.
That's kind of a logical thing. It's okay. Maybe this whole nation of immigrants, the great melting pot that was a complete marketing idea from the ADL. If you read the original game plan, it was the 1790 Immigration Act was pretty clear on white people of good character is who the great experiment is designed for. And we tried it, and it's not working with this, you know, multiculturalism because it's not designed to. The Kalergi plan and the Cloward-Piven plan are designed to destroy the great experiment so it can be replaced with the great work. Echo, echo, echo. And let me give you a spoiler. Nobody's going to like the great work. Yeah. It's a bad model. So.
Mr. Blackburn, I like to call it the Masonic shopping mall. That's what I like to call it, Maricois. The Masonic shopping mall.
What is it?
You know what, guys? I'm going to end with this. For all these whites, these jackass whites who can't see this, and they say, hey, kill me because I'm white, I say good riddance. I mean, really now.
You don't want to red pill them? You don't want to red pill them?
Nah, I ain't got time to teach people at my age anymore. They got to learn on their own, guys. With that, ciao.
All right, Chaz, always good to hear you calling in the show. That's the thing is, this is the reality of, what happens when you do this. And, the big aha moment with me was realizing that, this whole diversity thing that I was fed, you know, the script of equality, et cetera, all through, grade school, all through the, media, high school, college, university. And they knew it wouldn't work from day one. And that's the whole point of the exercise. So now it's, let's do something else. What do you think?
I think I feel like a new age homunculi sometimes when I'm in America. That's what I feel like. I feel like I'm one of those homunculi in like a tubes or whatever, a new age person that is being, under experimentation. that's the impression I get from like walking around America on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a bizarre experience up here to be gentrified and culturally phased out in your own homelands, where,
yeah,
you know, at one point, you know, you're like the honor student, Eagle Scout, mm-hmm, you know, young leader, blah, 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 in the paper all the time. And suddenly, all those people, they disappear and they're replaced by all these people that are into identity politics, that are all these cultural Marxist victim groups using the Cartman drama triangle that has you pegged for the oppressor in every one of the equations. And so, you know, this is what we're getting out of this university here, Appalachian State University. It's just these weaponized victim groups that are waging open warfare on the local white Christian Appalachian population.
Yeah. It makes you wonder also, like, you know, we killed the Indians for this.
Well, you know, that's the thing about this area is, you know, we basically bought them out.
I don't mean literally. I mean, I'm just saying figuratively. We killed the Indians for this, you know, for what we have presently, you know, shopping malls and
the great gay disco shopping mall. Yeah.
And Zog control, pretty much shopping mogs and Zog control, and where we can be partitioned off to play, you know, these little like cattle pens called the suburbs, you know, where we can't be wild and free anymore. I was just thinking about that, how we have been domesticated, really. You know, America is like one big domestication pen. It's like quite a shame.
Yeah, and you kind of start to wonder. It's like, what would 4 generations of fluoride poisoning due to a population? You know, where are the Edward Bernays studies on just how stupid and docile have we gotten since 1945 when they started fluoridating the water? Because it was good for our teeth, said the white coats of Baphomet, right?
Yeah.
Just like, you know, take the jab, Goy. It's good for you. Here, drink the fluoridated water. Bathe in the fluoridated water. You know, so anyway, keep going with what you were talking about.
So anyway, what I'm saying is that, like, you know, like the conditions in Appalachia were pretty bad, and I want to also, like, I have not, I've looked into this, you know, about the coal mines and who ran the coal mines, trying to look for some Jewish influence. I don't know if there is any. I'm sure that I probably can look, but what people don't know is that the Pinkertons were pretty much the precursors to the FBI.
And, oh, definitely. That was the secret, you know, police before the FBI got established. Okay, we got some calls queuing up. Let's take Mr. Wayne from Texas. Mr. Wayne, are you there, sir?
Yeah, hi, guys. Good discussion this evening. And my question is this. You were talking about migration earlier, but I'd like to address the invasion and current colonization from our southern border. We see these illegals coming across. They have no intention of assimilating like previous waves of immigrants from Europe and other places. And I firmly believe, I'm here in Texas, and I see the colonization process going on right now where they're getting more of their people elected. They're getting into positions of power. And I'm seeing where, again, even law enforcement is not really publicizing the amount of drug dealing and deaths and illegal drunk driving going on from these people. So I'm wondering, again, why isn't there more discussion of this across the board?
That's a good question.
I think, unfortunately, a lot of times when people are discussing this, they're reactionary and they're not revolutionary when they discuss this. And I'm going to say this. I think whites need to stop relying upon, you know, law enforcement or, you know, the government or whatever to depend on anything, because they're not going to – they are welcoming them here. They're giving them welcoming packages. They want these groups of people to replace us. And ultimately, I got to be honest, with the cartels and with their structure, they will probably replace us and displace us if we don't form a counter action against that. If we don't form our own form of, you know, society within a society in America. If we don't start forming parallel structures, they will overtake us.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think the most infuriating thing about this is we get this propaganda, well, they're just here to work and for a better life, but it's no
doubt. They're here to take over.
Oh, they're subsidized by our own tax dollars. They get free housing, medical, they get food stamps. I've seen these baskets in the food market that are just, you know, brimming, you know, with this. And plus they get free cars, too. There's another program there where they get these big subsidies, like it's an EITC-type program, and you see them driving SUVs and, you know, $40,000, $50,000 big-time vehicles, and nobody can speak a word of English. I see it during the middle of the day when people should be working. So, you know, again, we have our own government in various levels, you know, prodding this along and subverting, you know, what's happening to the inhabitants right now, all us tax-paying Americans.
Right, and what's so infuriating to me after, you know, being a, you know, son of a World War II veteran, decorated, you know, et cetera, going through, you know, all of the structures of this, you know, society to be thrown down after paying all that tax money for all those years. I paid a lot of taxes. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I'm, you know, living out of my car in a tent, and I go to Mr. Welfare Man, Mr. Social Service, Mr. Job Employment. It's like, white men need not apply. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't qualify for anything. I did not get one stitch of any assistance, no matter how hard I tried. And now we have a shuttle. Basically, they're taking these people from Texas and Arizona and New Mexico, putting them on buses. They show up in Greensboro. They divide them out, you know, for the whole region, and we get busloads of them up here. We've got a new NGO that's for, you know, incoming, you know, our, you know, welcoming committee, and it's basically all chicken swingers that are running all these NGO groups that are just shuttling them in, getting them driver's license, registering to vote, put them in free housing, welfare cards, and it's like you said, I go to the grocery store, and their shopping carts are full. There's 20 kids, none of them speaking, and they're playing with a welfare card. So that's my experience. So thanks for the call, Mr. Wayne. Hope you have a great weekend. Mr. Paul from Michigan. Mr. Producer, can we have Paul from Michigan?
Hello.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Good, good. You're talking about a subject that's kind of relevant to my experience in my youth. I was raised, grew up in Pontiac, Michigan, which was a factory town. It was General Motors, Truck and Coach, Pontiac Motors, and Fisher Body. And back in the day, in the 50s and 60s, it kind of worked. The races were kind of separate. You know, there were a lot of Mexicans, a lot of blacks, and a lot of whites from the South that came there for the good work and the good-paying jobs. But most of the whites from the South lived on the north side. The Mexicans lived on the east side, the blacks on the south side, and the west side was mostly white where I grew up. But I think one of the things that really destroyed that harmony, well, part of it was just the auto plants started closing up shop and leaving town, but was school busing really messed things up. And I remember when they were campaigning for that, just before they implemented it, the local KKK blew up a bunch of buses in the lot there, but that didn't stop them, of course. And so, I mean, there was already, like, white flight to the northern parts of the county and stuff, but that just totally ruined it. And Pontiac is a ghost town now. I live about 15 minutes north of there now in a kind of a Tony suburb, Birmingham, Michigan, which is filled with libtards, but it's pretty safe. And even you talk to people around here about property values and things like that, and most of them, when you press them on, will admit that they don't want to see a large influx of black people into Birmingham because it would just bring down housing.
Nobody does.
And me and another neighbor talk about it, and we're suspicious that the Birmingham City Council is trying to engineer some housing for ne'er-do-wells to move into Birmingham to do some virtue signaling or whatever. And I guess I would say I live in kind of a low-rent district of Birmingham in a condominium here. I'm thinking, this is right where they'd put them, too, you know. But from what you're saying, I can't rely on the police to help me, so we're on our own, huh?
Yep, yep. We are.
Right. And, yeah, that's the thing you just have to get your head around, that there is an active agenda to displace you. And if you, until you get that mindset, none of this makes sense, but once you realize that these people are using fourth and fifth generation warfare to basically carry out the biggest genocide in our history. Yeah, this is the eradication of the white race. Yeah, that is their end game objective. And this thing, Kalergi Plan and Cloward Piven Plan, is how they accelerate it. So, but Mr. Paul, thanks for the call. Anything else you want to follow up on before you go?
Well, with regard to that, I wish I could wake a few people up. But whenever you just even mention the word Jew, you know, they look at you like, what do you got against Jews? You know, I mean,
call them chicken swingers. At least it confuses them enough. what chicken swingers?
Tell them they abuse animals. Tell them they abuse animals.
But yeah. Without knowing the history and the clergy,
because they do
stuff, it's just people. But people don't read anymore, so they're never going to find out. I mean, maybe I could tie them up.
Work on their emotions. Work on their emotions. Tell them that Jews abuse animals.
I mean, at Thanksgiving, my brother-in-law...
Which they do.
We were sort of talking about politics, and his only comment was, well, it's all these white supremacists that are causing the problem.
Yeah, that's...
He's got
that's what CNN and the ADL tell me. The problem with America is it's too white.
White supremacists. You mean the ones that are controlled by the FBI, where they put informants in every single so-called white nationalist organization? How many informants cause trouble?
The ones he sees on TV, the guy waving the Nazi flag in your neighborhood, BB9. Yeah, no, that's who he's talking about, I suppose.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, and you think about... the FBI, when Michael Kadar, the little Jewish supremacist Maccabee, did over 2,000 terrorist attacks for money. He was making a lot of money doing this. They finally caught him, put him in prison in Israel, but the FBI and the ADL still kept those numbers, right? Well, even though it was done by a Jew against Jews, it still counts against white supremacists, right? And right before we were going on the air, this article dropped from Salon, Echo, 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 and it says, every domestic extremist murder last year was committed by right-wingers, according to a new Anti-Defamation League report, of course. So you have to go out and see this. It's hilarious. So. Anything else, mister?
I was just going to say that probably every flyer that Handsome Truth passes out counts as a hate crime, right?
They're trying very hard to make that a fact, that they want a three-year sentence, a felony, that you will never vote again. We will silence you forever. For basically doing leafleteering, these people would say Paul Revere was a hate criminal, right?
Right.
So, anything else, Mr.
For
Paul?
My call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. I hope you have a great weekend. So, had you seen this article, Mr. Patrick, about the domestic extremist murder?
I've seen enough. I haven't seen that particular article, but I've seen enough of them to know what they say. I mean, it's pretty much a boilerplate every time they put an article out on like some kind of white extremist. And the irony is that the left knows this as well, is that it's mostly being spurred by FBI agents within certain white organizations, or they're actually even creating, I would say, these extremist organizations in most cases.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing, that was part of the, Marxist strategy, is the best way to control the opposition is lead it ourselves. And, Orwell even talks about this in 1984, where you find out, spoilers, that, oh, my God, Emmanuel Goldstein isn't what he appears, and the Brotherhood isn't what it appears. We've mm-hmm. been had, that it was all being manipulated by the same people. This is part of... this fourth and fifth generation warfare. Yeah. They put all these Judas goats out there to attract, like a light, anybody that might be a potential problem. And yeah, that's the, you know, back when I was training for things like the NSA, yeah, this was the whole strategy behind things like Stellar Wind and Trailblazer and Prism. It's all, you know, bubbling people up to hit lists, you know, who is a potential threat to us. So,
Mr. Blackbird, can I give actually the audience a book recommendation?
Definitely.
There is a book called Aberrations in the Heartland of the Real, which was written by a leftist named Wendy Painting. And despite it being written by a leftist, it's a fairly accurate, I think, assessment of the OKC bombing. And I think a lot of the people in the audience should probably read that, because it does give a good overview of how the FBI infiltrates, sends their plants in there, and the fronts they put to this, and how they subvert, and how oftentimes they either like know about it beforehand, or they put people in there to stir up chaos. And this is something they do to all kind of groups, all racial groups, by the way, be they black, white, or whatever.
Operation, you know, MK Chaos was up there with MK Ultras. You know, how to infiltrate every group. That was the thing. Every group, and you know, just cause disharmony. And you see the same things in Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, and you read the same thing in the Talmud. Yeah. You know, it's like you start to see a pattern here, right? So when you're dealing with this type of, let's just atomize everything, you know, you have to learn the techniques like the Delphi tactics. You know, these people have come from a culture of pill pull where they will just argue you to death. Mm-hmm. And so you start seeing this in your meetings, be it, you know, a political group or some other, and you just suddenly you want to say, where are you from? How long have you been here? You know, what? And then you find out, oh, yeah, I just moved in 6 months ago, you know, but I think I speak for everyone here when I say, you know, this is just, you know, that kind of NGO warfare. And it's, you know, fascinating to watch them use this, everything, you know, from going into, you know, ramming Walmarts down communities' throats. You know, they use these type of tactics too, covering up after 9/11. You're talking about the FBI. It's like, you know, has the FBI ever actually solved a real crime that they didn't create? You know,
no.
It's like,
it's a good question. Yeah. I mean, why don't they do anything about these, black web, dark web pedophile rings? Why don't they do anything about that?
Right. You know,
if they're such good people. Why don't they do anything about child abduction or, like, the kids that go missing every year? Why don't they do anything about that? But instead, they're actually around a bunch of people, albeit some people that are mentally ill that, you know, are so-called white extremists. I mean,
it's like sending 14 agents to look at Jussie Smollett's, Bubba Wallace's noose, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, we are out of time already. Thank you so much, Mr. Patrick Three Stacks, for Surviving Why America, for being on the show. Enjoyed it, and I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. And until next time, I will see you all at the rendezvous.
My mama always said to me, Jim, take a tatering way. Now, taters never did taste good, but chicken on the plate. But I had to eat them just the same. That is why I look so bad and have these puny ways. Because I always had to take an old cold tatering way.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.